The classic investment opportunity is where there's a problem, according to investment banker Michael Moe. The larger the problem, the larger the opportunity. And there's no larger problem today, and hence no larger investment opportunity, than how to better educate our populace. Inspired by that belief, Moe helped raise more than $500 million to finance Edison Schools, a publicly traded for-profit company that operates schools on behalf of local governments and plans eventually to own and run its own schools. Edison Schools is the largest education management organization, EMO, in the United States, with 133 schools and 74,000 students currently under its control. It, along with roughly 40 other EMO corporations, reflects a growing trend in the United States toward privatization of kindergarten through 12th grade, K-12 education. Because the education market combines a large problem with a small corporate presence, says Moe, it is poised, much as healthcare was 30 years ago, to expand rapidly in the coming years. The industry is in the first inning of a 9-inning game that could go into extra innings, he says. In 2001 alone, for example, the number of EMOs in the United States increased by 70%. Conservatively, Moe estimates, 10% of the $800 billion education industry will be run by for-profit corporations in 10 years' time, compared to 1% today. Government, much like other businesses, he says, now wants to outsource its operations, and it is likely in coming years to transform its role in education from an owner-operator of schools to be more of a general contractor. Milton Friedman agrees. I've been involved in this movement now for 45 years, he says of his advocacy of privatized schools. And it's in the last 5 years or so that we've really started to break the ice jam and get moving. In the not-too-distant future, he predicts, corporations like Edison Schools will develop into enterprises that will run their own private schools rather than just operating government-owned schools. No doubt, huge opportunities await corporations such as Edison Schools that manage to infiltrate K-12 education in any significant way. It's almost unimaginably vast, says Edison chairman Benno Schmidt Jr., of the potential for growth in the industry. Education is bigger than defense, bigger than the whole domestic auto industry. In fact, only healthcare has a larger segment of the American marketplace. In other countries, too, there are potentially bright futures for corporate schools, adds Moe, who cites Canada and the United Kingdom as just two examples of the many countries around the world that are turning more toward market-driven mechanisms to reform their education systems. Backers of for-profit schools have used political muscle to promote the growth of their industry. Two of Edison's largest investors, Boston financier John Childs and Gap chairman Donald Fisher, recently donated $670,000 and $260,800, respectively, to the Republicans. They must have been pleased when President Bush pledged $3 billion in federal loans to fund new charter schools and subsidize students who wish to attend private schools, policy changes that will expand the markets for EMOs. Other big money supporters of Bush also have major stakes in the education industry. Leading businessmen, such as Amway founder Richard DeVoe, industrialist David Brennan, and Walmart's John Walton, have supported Bush and spent millions of dollars promoting state voucher systems, which will create lucrative markets for EMOs once they're adopted. Despite their enthusiasm for privatized schools, proponents have no solid evidence to support their claims that such schools perform better in terms of children's learning outcomes than comparable public schools. Indeed, Edison's claims to that effect have been questioned by independent researchers at Western Michigan University, who found that Edison students do not perform as well as Edison claims in its annual reports on student performance. The company has been criticized for other alleged exaggerations, such as inflating the numbers of schools it runs by counting each of the K-5, 6-8, and 9-12 grade divisions as separate schools in settings where they are actually all administered by one principal and housed in one building. But that is not the worst of Edison's troubles. Recently, shares in Edison schools, which had reached a high of $21.68 on the NASDAQ stock exchange, plummeted to less than $1. To save money in running its Philadelphia schools, the company sold off textbooks, computers, lab supplies, and musical instruments. It also moved its executives into schoolrooms in the hope of saving $9,000 a month in rent on their corporate offices. Upon learning about the move, the school board quickly ordered the executives out of the schools. Edison founder and CEO Chris Whittle further proposed that the company use unpaid Edison students to do the work of paid school employees. "We could have less adult staff," he is reported to have told a group of Edison principals as he described his plan to have each of 600 students in a school work 1 hour a day at administrative tasks, thus making the work of 75 adults redundant. Proponents defend the privatization of schools and privatization more generally as theoretically correct, even while in the real world it often goes awry. Playing on people's self-interest in material gain, they say, echoing the premise of laissez-faire economic theory, is the surest route to promoting the public good. "People tend to react to economic incentives as a reason to do things," says Edison Schools financier Jeffrey Frum, explaining why he thinks for-profit schools should outperform their public counterparts. "Motivated by a desire to make money, teachers in for-profit schools will teach better, administrators will administer better, and corporations will provide their customers, parents, teachers, school boards, with what they want and need. Therefore," says Fromm, "the for-profit incentive can have a positive impact on schools, even though corporations have to think, really, only about one bottom line. Corporations can provide the ability for change to be infused into the educational system," he believes, "because the Darwinism among business in a capitalist economy, if unleashed on the education system, will tend to produce better education in the U.S. Privatization thus makes the most of our inevitably selfish and materialist nature. "We owe our daily bread not to the benevolence of the baker, but to his concern for his own interest," is how Milton Friedman, paraphrasing Adam Smith, explains the virtues of privatization. By corollary, public institutions are inherently flawed, according to Friedman and other privatization proponents, because they rely on an unrealistic, that is, not entirely selfish and materialistic, concept of human nature. "The big difference," Friedman told me when I asked him what separated his views from John Kenneth Galbraith's, "is whether you are really willing to accept the idea that civil servants are pursuing the interest of the community at large, rather than their own self-interest. That's the big divide. That's the divide between Galbraith and myself." Though privatized services might, by some measures and in some contexts, prove more effective than public ones, privatization is flawed as a general and long-term solution to society's problems. Philosophically, it rests upon a distorted and incomplete conception of human nature. Self-interest and materialistic desire are parts of who we are, but not all. To base a social and economic system on these traits is dangerously fundamentalist. On a more practical level, Privatization is flawed for its reliance on for-profit corporations to deliver the public good. Unlike public institutions, whose only legitimate mandate is to serve the public good, corporations are legally required always to put their own interests above everyone else's. They may act in ways that promote the public good when it is to their advantage to do so, but they will just as quickly sacrifice it, it is their legal obligation to do so, when necessary to serve their own ends. No doubt privatization opens up new areas for corporations to exploit for profit, which is why they zealously promote it. From the public standpoint, however, we have to ask what kind of society we create when we put corporations in charge of the very sinews of our society, the institutions that define who we are, that bind us together, and that enable us to survive and live securely.